Hello and welcome by episode 5 of the Braaibak Show. I'm Riaan Knutse and this is Pieter Marks de Villiers, two friends talking about money and all things finance with the aim to educate all of South Africa. So today we will cover the topic of wealth, like we said in our previous episode, and we will talk about it in really three phases again. So firstly, what is wealth? What is the amount to aim for? And then thirdly is, how do I get there? What is the journey to getting to wealth? Yeah. Welcome, Pieter.
Awesome. Thank you, Riaan. Yeah, it's such a nice meaty topic to cover, and kind of the whole point of building personal finances is to achieve wealth and riches. So quite exciting topic we're going to cover today, and we hope to that you also found it valuable. And we are going to review Jumping Jack Popcorn. Gourmet popcorn. What does gourmet popcorn mean? Is that like a special type?
No, it's probably just not salt and vinegar. It's a bit more fancy.
Sounds like something you buy at a French restaurant. Gourmet popcorn.
Yeah. When I read gourmet, I always think expensive. Yeah, if you go to the gourmet pizza at Panarottis, you know you're going to pay 40 Rand more.
Yeah, so this is premium stuff. Joking. We got it from Checkers. but yeah, this is such a classic thing. When you see popcorn, you think about Saturday movie. You know, when we were still younger, we actually had to go to the video store to buy a tape, like those video cassettes. You kind of rent out 3 for the weekend, and then you go sit down in the family, you huddle up, put it into the video machine. You've got your popcorn, got your blankie, your hot chocolate.
Did you say video machine?
Yeah.
Just explain to the millennials what the video machine is.
They don't even know. Sweet summer child. So yeah, back in the day, we didn't have flash drives. You had to have this video, what they call the VHS tape.
Yeah, videotape, yeah.
It's like this black rectangular box thing that contained one video that you had to put into a video machine, and then it had like these two holes in the middle that spun the film of the video, and then that will reflect on the TV, and that's how you will watch it. So that was like way back in the day. After that, CDs came, so that was a bit more modern. So now you had a DVD player. And then I always remember when you go to the video store and you take out CDs, they had this machine thingy that they used to clean the CD, and then it's always nice and shiny, but then the thing still hucks halfway through.
It doesn't start even with the first scene, it just like freezes, and you're like,
or it freezes like way at the end, and you never get to see the end of the movie. And you can't quickly go on Netflix and see, because it didn't exist, so you were like,
can't see the happy ending.
Yeah, so
sad.
So this always reminds me of those good old days. I mean, we still eat popcorn, you go to the movies. There's another thing that kind of upset me the other day when I went to Sterkinikor. I can't remember how long ago we went to see a movie, like before COVID. But it used to be that you got this nice big, basket or carton filled of popcorn. Mm. And then they had these big salt containers that you can just hoy it with as much, butter salt, salt and vinegar, sour cream and chives. And I hoy that thing until it dripped salt. And that was, I loved it. Now I see you only get those little, you get like a little packet of salt that you have to buy. And it's so little, so it's not even, I want my popcorn to be like yellow green, then I know.
When I was at a movie last, like when that was still my experience, I didn't know that changed.
Yeah, no.
I've heard like cinemas aren't cheap anymore either. Like it's actually a very expensive take now.
Yeah, it is. So into budget for it. But
budget to take out your girlfriend to the movies nowadays. You know.
That's why we buy it at Checkers and we put it on the laptop in the room, where it's free. And then we watch our Netflix. So, yeah.
Almost sad to think about it, that's gone. Like, it was always so exciting to go to the video store, the DVD store, and choose your 3 movies for the weekend. Like, I mean, that's just gone now. You just sit in front of the TV, scroll through Netflix or Prime Video, or
you've got so many choices. It takes away that anticipation of Saturday's movie night. Now it's just like eating lunch on a Monday. Oh, I can put up my Netflix series. Mm. So good times.
But shows how spoiled we get and how easy it is to get spoiled.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but back to our topic, wealth. So first of all, again, what is wealth? What is the definition in your mind, Pieter, of wealth?
I think wealth is different for everyone. It's depending on what you think it is. So wealth in financial terms is having excess. It's having a lot of money, more than you necessarily need.
Mm.
So I think there's a point where you have wealth that can sustain your standard of living, that covers your basics. Then you get a different type of wealth that kind of covers your basics as well as kind of nice discretionary expenses. Mm. And then you get complete wealth where you just have more than you can ever spend. If you look at billionaires, they will never be able to spend what they actually, what they're worth. So it has different layers of wealth, but to break it down to its core, having more than what you need.
Yeah, I think for me, exactly like you said, is having excess. So, over and above what you need. I think for me, it's thinking of someone wealthy is someone that can have luxuries like a holiday home, drive the brand new, very nice cars like a Porsche or, something like that. And I think, that can also describe rich people, I guess. And I think rich people and wealthy people are not necessarily the same thing. I actually heard the other day the definition of wealth that I quite liked, actually. So it's saying that wealth is the money you don't spend or the money that you don't need to spend. So it's that over and above, like literally just the money that you don't or don't need to spend. And it just keeps growing and growing.
Yeah. There's definitely a difference between being rich and being wealthy. Being rich is more trying to show, to flaunt your money and like, look at me. I live in this house. I drive this car. I've got all the money. And usually those guys are not wealthy because they finance lifestyles through debt. They look very wealthy to us at the, scrolling through Instagram, but they may not necessarily have a financial stability that someone who does not have all of these nice things, but they have more money in the bank. So they are wealthy. You get people that has very average careers being very wealthy at the end of their working career because they've saved and invested and they've got so much money now that they can sustain their lifestyle that they've always had into way beyond death, age of death. They have more than they need.
Yeah. I think also important to mention in terms of wealth is bringing back into the conversation the financial freedom discussion we had in our previous episode. It's really getting into, you've covered the basics. So, the financial pyramid that we spoke about, you've covered that. You're over and above that now. So you've got all of that in there. And you are effectively got a very stable pyramid and your money at this point in time is working for you to generate more money.
Your money is making babies and the babies are making money babies. It's compounding effect of your savings over a long period. Yeah.
So thinking of that definition, I know you said it's different for everyone, but how much do you need to be wealthy?
How long is a piece of string, Rion? It's there's no way to determine like a rule of thumb. I think it really boils down to what is enough for you. Some people have a very basic lifestyle and they love it because they get to spend time with family, but they don't have a lot of expenses. So they also don't always necessarily measure wealth in terms of money, in monetary terms. You could also be wealthy because you have a big family or you get to spend time raising your kids. You've got financial freedom or maybe time freedom, which is also a form of financial freedom. So wealth, yes, it could be measured in money and you could say, I need 50,000 rand a month, then I'll be wealthy in my mind. I'll be able to cover everything and more than I need. Sure.
Until lifestyle creep comes in.
Yeah, then you get to that point and you're like, okay, now I'm getting used to this. Now I need 100,000. Now then I'll be happy. So you should be careful not to attach your happiness to the amount of money that's coming in or that's in your bank. You need to sit and think what makes you happy and focus on that. Because oftentimes if you're going to focus on the money, you get fixated on the amount. Yes, you'll be able to maybe get there and you're going to chase money the whole time, but you're going to sacrifice something else.
Yeah.
You're going to work harder, work longer, have less time with family. So if family is what's important to you, then maybe you don't need a lot of money to be wealthy because what your wealth definition is seeing your kids grow up, making sure they've got the right guidance to become financially stable when they enter the career. So it's really different for everyone and you really have to think, what is enough for me and how do I measure that?
Exactly. And I think the question actually changes a bit here in terms of when will you be content with what you have? And I think in the Bible, there's also a verse that says with contentment comes great gain. So as soon as you get that point in terms of, okay, I'm really happy with my lifestyle, everything over and above this will be, you know, setting your journey, or that's the point in time where you go into financially freedom to wealth.
No, exactly. It's something we should all aspire towards, but it shouldn't necessarily be a destination. It should be a journey, because you can still have some form of wealthiness on your way to that number. And it always comes down to being content with where you are now, and everything else is a bonus. But it's always good to have good dreams.
Exactly, exactly. But then to go into how do you become wealthy? And I think to illustrate that point, again, I got to an equation. I don't know if anyone else has got this. I think this is a brainchild of mine. But if it's not, apologies for whoever thought of this before me.
Stop stealing people's ideas. <you know?
laughs> So the equation is equity plus cash flow equals your wealth. So it is it seems quite simple and straightforward, but I think it can become a little bit more complex as we dive into it. So just quickly, equity is your net asset value, effectively. So it's your assets minus your liabilities. So that's your equity. Your cash flow is your income less your expenses. So it's that surplus money that you've got at the end of the month on your budget. So it's all of your income less all of your expenses. And then wealth is the part where you've got your ownership and control that leads to access. So it's the net assets that you have generating more income, and that income then generating more assets, and the assets generating more income, and the cycle continues. So that's the cycle of how you enter into wealth.
Yeah. It's similar to how you determine your net worth. Is you take what you own, your assets, minus what you owe, your liabilities, and that net effect is what I am worth. So if I had to sell everything and cover all my debt, what is that amount that's attached to it? So yes, that's one component, but also the cash flow that you can use your day to day, and adding those two together, having more assets and liabilities, earning more than you spend, that you then use the extra cash flow to build more equity, to build more assets. That is how you create the wealth that we are referring to. Exactly. In a monetary term.
Yeah. So if you look at that equation, there's really four variables that you need to look at to get to wealth. And those are your assets, your liabilities, your income, and your expenses. And I like it the way to almost look at it from an economical perspective. So when I had economics in university, it always like, with all other variables constant, this is what will happen if this variable changes. So with all else being constant, if you increase your assets, your wealth will increase. Everything constant, if you decrease your liabilities, your wealth will increase. Then similar for income and expenses. So if you increase your income, your wealth will increase. And if you decrease your expenses, your wealth will increase. I think important to the wealth equation, though, is that normally these things work actually with each other. It's very seldom that you will only increase one of them. Well, maybe if you only increase income and then lifestyle creep and your expenses increase as well. Well, hopefully not. But effectively, what you need to do is you need to use these four variables in conjunction with each other to get to wealth. So as an example, if you take, you do your budget for the first time and you realize, okay, I'm really overspending on a few things, you can decrease your expenses to increase your income, and then use that increase in income to either decrease your liabilities or increase your assets. And as you follow that cycle and your cash flow stays positive, you can, you know, put it away on a monthly basis. So ultimately what will happen is your assets will increase. That assets can then generate an income for you, and that income can then be used again to either decrease your liabilities or increase your assets. And it's that cycle again, like we spoke about just now, in getting into wealth.
Yeah. It's often referred to as playing the money game. So if you have ever played a board game, chess, checkers, any Monopoly, you will only be able to get good at it if you understand the rules of the game. Because you're not going to play, you're not going to become a grandmaster if you don't know how the pieces move in chess. So first you need to learn the rules of the game, then you need to practice and you need to play and play and fail and get checkmate and then start again. And that is similar how we think about these four quadrants. It's thinking, right, so we've got income, expenses, assets, liabilities. We need to divert as much of our cash flow from expenses, liabilities, and income towards assets, because assets is what's going to fund income again at a later stage. So knowing the rules of the money game, if you learn them, you need to apply them constantly. That's how you're going to get better, and that's how you're going to win at the game of life, the money game of life.
Exactly. And I think, again, important to state here is that it's not a once-off big decision and how it's done. I'm on my way to being wealthy. It's these small incremental decisions that you need to make for every money decision. I think we mentioned it in the previous episode as well, in terms of you'll make decisions constantly, and it will either have a, you know, compounding positive effect, or it might have a, you know, compounding negative effect on that. So I think for financial decisions, if you understand this money game, as you said, financial decisions should actually become quite easy. You know, before you make a money decision, before you purchase a car, before you spend money on anything, as an example, you just need to pause for a second and ask, how will I affect these four things, and will it be, you know, getting me closer to wealth? If the answer is no, then maybe it's not the right financial decision.
Yeah, and just again, applying small daily habits of managing money, making sure you don't spend more than you earn, that you pay off your bad debt, and you invest the difference. We're going to sound like a broken record, but that is really the basics. And if you apply the basics, if you learn how to crawl, you'll eventually learn how to fly. Can't fly when you don't know how to walk.
So just diving a little bit deeper, not deeping diving into.
Deeping a little diver.
Yeah. So diving a little bit deeper into each one of these, I think there's two of them that's almost limiting in the way in how it can project you onto your wealth journey, and two of them that's almost like unending or unlimited. So the first two, let's focus on expenses and liabilities. So both of these are, for me, a limiting factor. So as expenses, as an example, yes, you can most definitely keep your expenses or get your expenses to be lower, but you'll always have some sort of expense in your life. You can't actually decrease your expenses to zero on a negative amount. Then it will be income, to be frank. But you'll always have some life expense. So you'll always need to buy at least food, or you'll need to buy clothes or stuff like that. So yes, you can get to a point where your expenses is really almost at that covering basic human needs, and that's probably the best place to be, so you don't have any debt or anything like that. But there's you can only go as far down as your basic human needs effectively.
And it's a balancing act, because when you need to get to a point where you realize, okay, I need to start investing, so first step is go to your budget, see where you can cut down. Oftentimes you identify easy wins where it's like, yeah, I've been paying for this subscription for years now. I don't even know. Cancel that, I win. But what we oftentimes need to go and look at is the big expenses, the biggest one, taking the biggest hop out of your paycheck. Maybe it's rent, you're living in too big of a house, move to a smaller one. It's going to have a lot more leverage on that. But it does get to a point where you've really cut down everything to the bone, where life becomes miserable. And we also don't want that, because a plan is only as good if you follow through with it. And if the plan makes you miserable, this whole thing is for nothing. And I've actually experienced that. My wife and I went through a phase where we tried to see, how far can we cut down our expenses? It was an experiment. I made a video on my other channel, on Money Marks, to show you kind of our experience doing it, and also the tips we learned how to really cut down. And that was at a point where you fill up two liter water bottles and you put it in the toilet, in the sink. So when you flush, it doesn't use the full amount. You really get very technical on little ways to, you switch off the lights and you put off the plug because the little red light is taking electricity. So you go to the extreme to see and save like incremental rands and cents. But when I came to the point where I realized, what you're doing now is you're cutting down on expenses, yes, but you're also becoming miserable, because especially like stuff like food, healthy food is expensive. So yes, you can eat cheaper food, but that's going to have a long-term effect on your health, which is also very expensive, medical bills. So you have to have that balancing act. So yes, cut the fat where what you're spending money on does not resonate with your values and what makes you happy. But don't go so far that you experience financial fatigue where you just give up on this whole plan because, this is not what I thought it was. So it's really, making sure that you balance the two against each other And that you don't go too extreme.
Yeah, it's something where you can actually hold that lifestyle for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing as you, if you're going on a diet. So, you know, in the first 2 months, you're motivated and, you know, it's not that bad. But ultimately, if you get to an extreme diet, you will break it and then you'll just go back to your old habits because, you know, it's not sustainable.
Mm.
And I think the same thing definitely applies to finance. The thing is, for me, though, if you're on that journey and you're really almost finding this and you see, okay, well, listen, I need to cut down on my bad debt, I don't think it's a bad thing to almost get into that extreme cutting for a month or two, but it should be a very short, you know, hard sprint. And then and for a specific objective. So if you know, okay, listen, I've got 10,000 Rand on my retail accounts, let me just cut down extremely hard for 2 months, get that 10,000 Rand off the books, and then I can go back to my normal lifestyle after that. So I think there is a place for that, but it's definitely not something you can do for your life. And that's also why I mentioned in the previous episode that the FIRE movement, or, you know, the, what is it, financial independence, retire early,
yeah,
is not for everyone, because it's really taking that principle and doing it for a few years to get to early retirement.
Decades sometimes, yeah. So it's kind of also be cognizant of the fact that, yes, sometimes you really have to go gazelle intent, as Dave Ramsey would refer to it, as you like hyper-focused. I need to pay off this debt. I need to cut down to the bone. Sometimes I cut into the bone because I need to get rid of these credit cards. Yes, that sometimes needs to happen, but it's not a sustainable thing. So it's good to do that exercise, but then also there's other better ways to actually make that wealth equation make more sense.
Exactly. So the other limiting factor is then liabilities. So similar to expenses, you can only cut liabilities to a certain extent, and that is zero.
Yeah.
So you can have no debt. And that's definitely something that we need to aspire to. And I think if you get to that point where you've got no debt, it's beneficial to you in a lot of different ways. I think psychologically it helps you, and it most definitely lowers your financial risk. I think in one of the previous episodes I also mentioned, for example, our house that went from, you know, as when we bought it, you know, in that interest rate cycle of a year and a half, it went up with 7,000 Rand. Mm. So you are under considerable risk if you have debt. So I think it has multiple benefits, but ultimately it is a limiting factor, as you can only get it down to zero.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So you sometimes debt can help accelerate wealth building. So think of it, you take out a student loan to get a degree, a 4-year, 5-year degree that will land you a good paying job. Yes, for sure. That could be leverage. Or you are someone that goes into the property investing game and you have the right structure in place and you leverage the bank's money to build out a property portfolio and you know what you're doing, then debt could be help. It could work in that sense.
Mm.
But you have to be very careful because it is a double-edged sword and does not work for everyone. So for the general population, as Dave Ramsey would often referred to it, is it's better to just stay out of debt. You'll be better off. Some people can leverage it in a good way, but that's a story for another day. It's better to try and avoid it.
Yeah, because you most definitely put yourself under some risk if you take any sort of debt.
Mm.
So even if you do it for you know, economic reasons that make sense, so for example, buying a rental property, but you also need to take into consideration there will be vacancy in that rental property. So, and the bank's not going to worry about that. They just want their payment. So you put yourself under that risk. So if you're buying a rental property, be sure that you can at least cover the cash flow for a few months.
Mm.
You know, in the case of vacancy or you know, stuff happens and tenants don't pay or they don't pay the full amount. So it is a risky strategy. I would also think debt is probably one of those that you should just avoid as far as you can. But ultimately, we know it can also be a wealth-generating tool. So just use it wisely, I guess, is the point there. Also, just if you decrease liabilities, it's important to note is that it will have a direct impact on your income, on your cash flow that you've, on the cash flow part of the wealth equation. So the less debt repayments you have, the more money you actually have to buy or to reinvest in further assets. So that actually then naturally takes me into the other two variables. So the other two variables in my mind is definitely in South African context, there is no limit to it. So there's no ceiling. So there's literally no ceiling to how much income you can how much income you can make. So I think in your chosen career or in your chosen job, naturally there might be a ceiling. But theoretically, if you choose the right path, there's literally no end in terms of how much income you can generate on a monthly basis or yearly basis.
Yeah. If you work a normal 9-to-5, sure, you're going to earn an income and it's hopefully going to increase every year and maybe you get a promotion. In that sense, potentially, there will be a ceiling. If you're more an entrepreneur and you build businesses, then that's the sky is the limit. No, there is no sky. There's no limit. So you can really amplify your income earning ability. And it's not going to happen just because you want it to happen. The way you earn more money is you need to solve more complex problems, meaning you need to add more value to society, and then you'll be paid accordingly. So if you want to earn more income, you need to position yourself to add more value and to then get paid accordingly. But if you can understand that and you start thinking about that, especially in South Africa, because yes, our country is a third world country. The unemployment rate is close to 40%. It's horrible statistics. But given that, there's a lot of opportunities available as well. And we can either complain about the country or we can start thinking about, okay, what are the problems? How can I bring a solution to the market? Because if you can do that consistently and you can package that someone is willing to pay for, then that's where opportunity is and that's where the ceiling breaks, because that's where you become a business-minded person, an entrepreneur, and how you can create long-term sustainable wealth.
Exactly, yeah. So I think from an income perspective, you should always find a way to keep the most that you are making. So find ways where you can optimize your taxation, find ways to protect yourself against income loss, etc. So keep what you make, and then secondly, put to work the money that you already make and find ways to make more money.
Yep.
So just on that, is there a few tips or tricks that you can think of in making more money, increasing your income?
For sure. So I think, again, it comes down to understanding yourself. What makes you unique? What skills, what God-given talents do you possess, and what are your interests? So I always think of it as kind of a triangle. You think of what am I good at?
We love triangles, eh?
Yeah, yeah, of course. What am I good at? What do people come to me for help? And what is this specific skill something that people will pay for? So think about your day-to-day stuff. If you go to a braai over the weekend, what does your friends come to you to ask questions? Sometimes it may be some skill. Maybe you are a rugby expert and you know exactly all the players that plays and you know what Sarasi is going to do next. Maybe you are a finance bro that really understands the markets and people always ask you tips on that. Maybe you're a fitness bro and you know you've just got the physique to, people look at you like, geez, how does he do it? So think about that. They come to me for this specific reason. Am I good at that? You know, because obviously if people ask for your advice, it means what you're doing is working. So now I just need to think, will people pay for this? And how can I package this in a way that people will pay for? So that is one way to think about it. But also, you can only really earn more if you add more value and if you gain more skills. So focus on first getting the skills. So get a degree, go and study something. That's a traditional way of doing things. I also think the way that university will evolve, it may not always stay the way that we think of it now as getting a four-year degree. Maybe stuff like careers like doctors, lawyers, engineers would stay. But in the online environment that we find ourselves in, you can do online courses on specific skills. Video editing, for example, is a highly valued skill that you can learn at the age of 8. You can just go onto a Skillshare or a Udemy or even YouTube, learn how to edit videos, get a client in the US, they pay you dollars, you spend in rands. I know a lot of people who's making a lot of money that way. So you don't have to confine yourself to, I need to get a job, and within a specific career, the internet opens up so many opportunities to start earning more through a side hustle beyond the borders of South Africa.
Yeah, Peter, I agree with you. So you need to find a thing that you are really good at and almost become a specialist in that. I think other ways are also, I think we already mentioned, so decreasing your debt or becoming debt-free is definitely a way to increase your income. But I think also very much strongly that came through that is, I believe that we as South Africans need to start pivoting towards being business owners and investors rather than just always thinking I need to have this career or this job, because that ultimately almost breaks up the ceiling and you can just go how far ever your business goes. There isn't something that says, you know, you've got all of these levels in the company. If you reach this level, you've earned a maximum of that amount. And I'm not saying that you can't live a very, very almost rich and wealthy life doing that. I just think that's probably one of the most difficult and most time-consuming ways to get to the top. So if you think about it, I don't know how many companies are listed on JSE now, more than 500, I think.
No idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about that, that's almost the amount of people in our population that will become a CEO of a JSE listed company. So it's a very, 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 very small amount of people that will actually reach the very top of a journey like that. And it's a very difficult path to follow. I think there are people with small to medium businesses that make as much or even more than CEOs of JSE listed companies. So it's definitely not the only route that we can take. And I think in South Africa, there is that thing that I need to be in the best career and chosen the best company to climb the ladder, and that's the way I will, live a good life. I think we almost need to break away from that and become more of an entrepreneurial view, because that way you really break open the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, it depends on you and as a person. There's nothing wrong with following a stable career. It's actually, I think, from a stability point of view, better to earn a monthly income and saving less than you earn investing. It's definitely going to take the longest, but consistency is key. But if we think about how can I accelerate this, especially, if we say the unemployment rate is almost 40%, there's no jobs, then go create the job. Then go be that guy who actually identifies a problem and bring a solution and employ people. So yes, I agree. We need to start thinking about entrepreneurs, think like we are entrepreneurs. And I think that's something that's quite strong, that comes strong across as South Africans. So I studied veterinary science. When I worked as a vet, I constantly got emails, and I still do, of Australia, New Zealand, and UK trying to recruit us veterinarians from South Africa, because they know that we tend to work harder. We've got tenacity, we've got grit, because everything going on in the country, we're still beating the others in the World Cup. We're still becoming world champs. We're really rising to the top. So we've got it within us. It's within our blood. It's within the soil of South Africa. Mm-hmm. But you need to change your mindset of complaining because there's no jobs to, okay, I know that's a problem, but how do I now create it? How do I position myself? And you don't have to have a fancy building to be a business owner. You can start with whatever you do from your house and find a solution to a problem.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think the summary of that is find what you are good at as an individual. Find what you have you feel like you have a purpose for in life. And then really just follow that and follow that quite hard. So in that sense of, like you said, building up your skills, getting a degree, self-improvement. And then for me, it's getting to a point where you differentiate yourself from the majority. And that's where you will actually get to adding value and where you will become valuable. Thinking of an example of that is I don't know if you follow Formula One at all, but there's an engineer from Red Bull that recently resigned, Adrian Newey, and he's actually won quite a lot of world championships, and he's almost regarded as the engineer that's the most successful in Formula One. And when he now resigned from Red Bull, he's been hot property. So every other team wants him, and they are willing to pay top dollar for him. And he's almost like, he can set his own salary almost. Like, that's the feeling I get. So really setting yourself apart and differentiating yourself is the way to do that. And I think that's in an individual way. So if you follow the career path and you're climbing the corporate ladder, definitely that's still something to think about. But also if you are doing a business or if you're starting a new venture like we are. So in our case, for example, we need to be ambitious and strive to be the best podcast about finance in South Africa, and then always striving to be that differentiating point. So staying ahead of the curve.
Yeah, what comes to mind to me is make it difficult to fire you and even more difficult to hire you. Meaning that if you have a job, become so good at it that you become such an important part of the business that your boss is just like, if we lose this guy, things are going to be difficult. But also make it difficult to hire you. You have to get to a point where you become so highly sought after in demand that people line up to want to work with you because you've got a unique set of skills, or maybe you've got many different skills that you're stacking. Maybe it's like a bunch of different average skills that you're stacking on top of each other, and then you build something unique that no one else does, that's where you will become very wealthy, because you'll be able to deliver, you'll be able to solve a very unique problem that very few other people do. A neurosurgeon has studied 14, 15 years to get to a point of doing surgery, solving problems that very few other people in the world can do. That is why they are paid so well.
Exactly. And then getting to a point where you've got the surplus cash or surplus income, and then you need to almost transition into purchasing these income generating assets. And then that brings me to the last variable, and that's assets. So I think a good place to start here is almost to get a definition. I'm just going to read it because I'm scared I'm not going to remember it out of my head. But it's anything tangible or intangible, owned or controlled by you, that will that you can use to generate future economic benefits. All right, so using that definition, Peter.
From Wikipedia.
That's actually, well, I didn't actually Wikipedia. It's what I can remember from accounting 1A, 2A, I don't know, somewhere in the varsity. But it's actually, it's the accounting definition of asset. But using that definition, would you say your primary residence, as an example, is an asset?
Generally, no. Well, it depends, because the way I see assets, it can be divided into four types. You get lifestyle assets, which is the stuff that you attach emotion to. It's what you buy with your money that makes you happy. That could be a house, it could be a car, it could be your golf clubs that you go and club a couple of balls every weekend. The stuff that you purchase that you stay in and that you're going to use the rest of your life. You're always going to have a house and a car and stuff like that. Then you get business assets, which is the stuff that actually earns you money. So it could be a salary, could be a business, it could be a rental property. They generate income. Then you get investment assets, which is the stuff that you actually put, you know, it's also generating an income, but the idea is to later live off of that when we reach financial freedom or retirement. And then you get surplus assets, which is the stuff that you kind of, your life is sorted, you've got enough, it's the extra fat that you can just go and blow. You can just kind of go and have fun, use it as you want. If you lose it, it's fine because you're taken care of. So if you think of assets in those four classes, a house, a primary residence would likely be a lifestyle asset. So yes, it is an asset in terms of it's something that you could potentially sell, but you're always going to have to live in it. So unless you are planning on generating an income from it, it's not necessarily going to be something like an investment asset, which is a rental property. That could be an asset. So it kind of circulates between the four, because a business asset is something, maybe you own a business, you can't really live off of a business unless you sell the business and you invest the money, or you exit the business and they pay you out and you invest the money. So it's kind of going around the four types of assets, with a primary residence being more towards the lifestyle side.
Yeah. So it is a lifestyle asset, and in that definition, it's still generating future economic benefits, because you would expect your house value to go up. But if you think it from a purely almost cash flow perspective, then no, it's not really, because it's more of an expense than a income in that point. But yeah, I fully agree with you. It is an asset because you will get some future economic benefits of it whenever you sell it, and hopefully for a lot more money than you bought it.
Yeah, it could also be a liability if you're buying too much house than what you can afford, which many people fall into if they're not careful.
Yeah, so assets are also in that bracket of income for me, similar to income, that there is no ceiling. So there's literally no limit in terms of how much assets you can buy. Yeah. And I mean, we can see it with the billionaires in the world. They can just accumulate and accumulate and accumulate. I guess the question is, are you that person that wants to accumulate and just keep everything, you know, to yourself? Or if you get to that point where you feel like you said in the beginning of the episode, if you get to a point and you know, okay, listen, my family and I are covered for generations, is it this point now where I'm starting to give away and give to the community?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also you'll find that it's very tough to go from 0 to 100,000. It's easier to go after that from 100 to 1 million. It's probably easier to go from 1 million to 10 million. So it becomes easier building wealth as you become more wealthy, because you have more stuff at your disposal. If you own a lot of money, you can buy equipment like this and start a podcast producing content. We're not there. We had to really save up and take some risks to buy this. So that's us.
Well, if you have a lot of money, you can also put together a team. that can help you with content, and you can just create so much more good content.
Exactly. If you take Alex or Mosey, for example, he's very successful, probably one of the best entrepreneurs that's currently alive. He's producing content, but he's just sitting there talking. He's got a team that's doing the editing, the posting, the optimizing.
Yeah.
Marion and I need to do everything at this point. So we're not Alex yet, but it's fine. We're coming for you, Alex.
We're coming.
We're going to get there.
Yeah. So I think that's a very good point. So wealth is almost like a living organism as soon as you start making that wealth equation work for you.
Yeah.
As soon as you start making the right decisions constantly, it almost becomes like a living organism that just grows and grows and grows and grows. Mm-hmm. And there's literally no limit to it. Yeah. So maybe just to conclude this on wealth is, like I said in the beginning as well, it is making incremental decisions constantly towards the common goal of creating wealth. So if this is your objective and you really want to create wealth, just make all of your financial decisions based on those four variables. And if it has a positive effect on one of them or if the four of them in combination, then you're going into the right direction. Then secondly is to focus on increasing your income through your assets. So focus on almost generating a few different income streams. So working on that at the moment myself, but don't just rely on your salary, but start using your salary's income to buy assets or to start something else and generate another income. As soon as you've got two, then naturally it becomes easier to start investing in other assets again.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, I think we touched on it quite heavily as well, but become the expert in your chosen path. So choose a path that you want to become an expert in and just be the best that you can be in that route.
Yeah, and do what makes you happy, because if you follow your passion, the money would eventually follow, given that you found a way to package and conceptualize it, to offer it to the market, and they're willing to pay for it. And you're not going to have one day wake up with this massive idea. Maybe you do, but you still have to execute on that. And it usually starts with slow and painful and spending much more time. Growing a YouTube channel, for example, this is now my third one. The first two that I've created, it was like a full year's first year creating content every week, spending 10 to 20 hours a week in my after hours, after my full-time job, crafting, filming, editing, learning along the process. Didn't earn me a cent. But each one of those videos I see as a little asset that I've posted on the internet. Because yes, at that point in time, no one watched. But now that I've gained some traction, I don't have to post anymore. And I still earn a monthly salary almost from my YouTube channel just because I've front-loaded the work. So don't get discouraged when things get difficult, especially if you're an entrepreneur. It is going to be difficult in the beginning. It's very slow. Most businesses fail within the first 2 to 3 years. So you really have to put your head down and be consistent and focused. Also, don't try to do too many things at once. I've done that before. You're just going to drop the ball all over. You need to focus on one or two things and really immerse yourself into that skill set. Listen to podcasts, watch YouTube videos, read books, really become obsessed about it. Then you'll become successful. So be focused, be consistent, and do not lose track of the main goal that you want to create. Wealth that is within your level of contentment.
Yeah, and I think it's a very good point. So, it, like you said, it will get difficult, and you'll only stick to it if it's something you really have a passion for and you really love. So I think that brings us to the end of this episode of Wealth. Thanks, Peter, for being here. I'm Rian Knutse. This is Peter de Villiers. See you in the next one.
Cheers.